Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's the 8th of May. It's Richard Vobes in the Naked Englishman podcast. It's 20 past 7 in the morning on a cloudy morning. And I thought I brought down some cups for Julia and I to have some tea. And I left them in the bathroom and I have now retrieved them. And I should be making tea, and you can hear the creaky floorboards of the old mansion house at the end of its 2-mile driveway in the rural countryside, away from 5G, the noise of school children going to school, and the industry, surrounded by oaks and elms and beeches, hawthorn, blackthorn, and beautiful meadow grass. If only. We're just still in the two up, two down Victorian house in Worthing. Close-ish to the sea, close-ish to the downs, and so on and so forth. Anyway, quick cup of tea. I got something to read to you shortly that was posted through my door earlier, last night rather. But let me just get to Julia's tea organised and taken up to her. We need some more honey, for she likes a drop of honey in her tea, and I don't think there's any left. And I know what will happen. I'll have to resort to my secret supply. Just seeing if I can get enough in there. That is gone with its honey. Is this one gone? Yeah, all of these are just empty. Let me just stick some coffee into my... Gosh, all these jars are coming empty. Becoming empty. The cat is getting under my feet. There's food down for him and he won't eat it. Running out of raw milk. Going to the farm shop this morning. So we will sort that out. Billy had some seizures the other day. I'm going to have to buy him some farm food. He can't afford any proper food, but he needs to eat proper food, lose the carbs and less sugar. So there's that going on. Let me just stick this boiling water in. The cat is very fussy at the moment. But that's all there is, my friend. Right. Julia's tea, my coffee. We are out to dinner tonight, but it's a little trek. Been invited out. Farm shop as well. Luckily, no interviews today, although I've got interviews to put up. Yesterday I spoke to Alex about Egypt. All my honey that I have stashed seems to have disappeared. Not all of it, but I was getting two jars, putting one away, and they all just mysteriously got so little left. I like honey, but it's I don't eat it at the same volume as Julia, so I'm going to have to find other places to put them. Mind you, get out of the way, cat. For goodness sake. Goodness sake, cat. Right, I'm back. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. I have returned. I should just hand this to Julia, who is still snoozing in bed. Don't blame her. It's not quite 7:30. Whereas, right, let me just go and take this up. Up the apples and pears. Up the apples and pears with the chocolate eclairs. Oh, here we go. Here we are, my love.
Still in bed missing the love of her life, you mean?
Yes, still in bed missing the love.
Jumps out
in the morning, I know.
Speak to the lovely peoples.
Yes.
I hope you guys appreciate it.
They do.
Well, they better had, because otherwise I'll have problems with them.
Well, yes, she is like a rock viola sometimes for the nasty people.
Yes.
She's giving me a stare there. Right.
I wondered where you were going with it.
Oh. I'm talking weirdly about me. I'm not talking weirdly. Pardon? Right. So, right, now, I had this popped through my door, little leaflet. I hadn't had a proper look at it myself, but it should be engaging, by the lovely, what's his name? And he popped it through, what do you mean, what's his name? You know, thingamabob. I can't think of it. Chris Hare. Chris Hare, local historian. And nice chap. And he sent me this. It's a new little publication. It's a leaflet. Oh, to try and encourage people to know a little bit about their town. Richard Jefferies. Now, I mentioned Richard Jefferies. I can't remember if I mentioned it in the video or most likely in The Naked Englishman. I've spoken about him several times. Richard Jefferies was a writer of nature. And this is a very lovely leaflet that folds out into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 sections on one page and another 6 on the other. And I reckon that must have come out of, I'm just looking at this, a whole, well, probably a sheet of SRA2 when originally it was built. It says here, Richard Jefferies was born on a small farm near the village of Cote in Wiltshire. His father, the idealistic man with a love for learning, was unable to make a good living farming, and the family experienced real hardship. As a boy and a young man, Richard read extensively, immersing himself in the classics and Shakespeare. He would wander for hours on his own, observing nature and noting the ancient prehistoric remains in the landscape. An early career as a local journalist ultimately led to national recognition with his intimately observed essays on the English countryside being published in leading magazines of the day. Many of these essays were later collected into books, several being published posthumously. Despite battling increased ill health, the last 5 years of Jefferies' health were his most prolific, including hundreds of articles and many books. His metaphysical autobiography, The Story of My Heart, in 1883, and his apocryphal novel, After London, 1885, which imagines an England of the future reduced to barbarianism by an environmental catastrophe, were not in keeping with his times or his readers, but are today regarded as the two most important works. Jefferies also wrote novels with strong, independent-minded female characters who, like their creator, were children of nature and non-conformity. Felis Goring in The Dewy Morn, 1884, and Amaryllis Iden in Amaryllis at the Fair in 1887. I didn't know he wrote novels, so that's interesting. Jefferies moved to Sussex in 1883, living variously at Crowborough, Hove, and finally Goring, which is just down the road from me, a village he had known in his younger days and a place of peace and wooded solitude, yet close to the sea and the town of Worthing, where staying here in 1870 he met a young woman who seems to have captured his heart. Perhaps she formed the basis of his character Felise Goring in The Dewy Morn. Jefferies died at Goring on the 14th of August, 1887, nursed by his wife, Jessie, who wrote down his final notes and essays as he dictated to them from his sick bed. He was only 38 when he died and was buried in Broadwater Cemetery, where his grave may still be found. And it's interesting there's more to it, obviously, and I don't want to read any more to it at this precise moment, but it's interesting... He died at 38. He wrote these books. Here am I, 61, going 62, near. And I feel for me, my career, my what I'm sent here to do hasn't quite yet started. Maybe it's Biggleswick, maybe it's Mucklebunt, I don't know. Maybe it's the sum total of the other stuff when it's been made. the books that I wish to write. I have, you know, I'm still struggling to string sentences together in book form. And yet, there was a young man, 38, my God, you know, at the peak of his career, writing and publishing. And I look back at my career and the struggle it is to find recognition in anything. I suppose to make a living. I mean, I've made a living from juggling and unicycling. And it's funny, I look down on my career and think, what a waste of space, what a waste of time. I did make people happy and smile momentarily in perhaps, you know, moments of hardship. I don't know. But anybody could have done what I was doing. It didn't take a lot. And the television stuff that I thought was important at the time, Snug and Cozy, can you imagine? Nobody wanted me. Well, we know why, because you had to be of a certain type to get on television. And trying to get books published, when I was writing the Blue Skies and Vapor Trails, my story about the farm girl in the 1940s during the Battle of Britain, and I was sending to publishers and agents a sort of, what do they call it? A treatment of what the story was about and a few pages demonstrating, you know, the writing style. And I was sending this out 2-3 years before 2000 and 80 years. What would that be? 2020. So I was sending that out in 2017. That's right, because 2020 was going to be 80 years since the Battle of Britain. And of course, we now know 2020 was the year of COVID, of course. And I don't know that publishers knew that. Perhaps they did. Perhaps the top end did. They didn't want people thinking about resilience and fighting back, I suppose. When you think about it, that's what the Battle of Britain was people on the land. I hadn't thought about that before. But yes, any story about that's... It did strike me strange that nobody wanted to talk about the Battle of Britain 80 years on. And now we know why. Maybe there was a thing to say, no, we're not talking about that. A momentous time in which, for the first time in, I suppose, many, many years, that the other than pitched battles, like the Battle of Sedgemoor in 1685, which was, I think, the last pitched battle in England, had people been on the front line. And we'd seen the First World War, where people went off to different parts of Europe and sat in muddy trenches, getting trench foot and shot at and smashed to smithereens. But the Second World War and the Battle of Britain was the first time in England, down here on the south coast, that people, ordinary people, farmers' children, shopkeepers, ordinary domestic life was threatened by the air force of the Germans, the Luftwaffe, coming over and bombing. And not just in Sussex, but along the coastal, the whole coastal, the south, the eastern board, I think they call it, and the southern right across down to even as far as Cornwall, I think they were flying up to. But Sussex particularly, because you could get to London from Germany and France very easily. And we were on the front line. And of course, then it went into the Blitz and the Blitz spirit. And now it just suddenly occurred to me how there must have been, nobody was interested in 80 years of the Battle of Britain. It's just dawned on me. Because it would have meant we would remember how plucky we were, how we all got together, how we fought back against tyranny. And that was the last thing they wanted anybody to know. Now, I wonder if this is going to be my video. I mean, I'm practicing it here now. Anyway, I'll leave that for the video, maybe. But, yes, so I sent that out. Nobody was interested. And my career has really been nobody was interested. It's a very strange thing. Then everybody was interested in the talkie. I got monetized and we were just about to start making some proper money from the YouTube channel. And then, of course, it's all harmful content. They've demonetized me. And now Billy needs support because he is having these seizures and he needs extra income to buy proper farm food. And, you know, he's struggling and he can't work now. He can't work because of these bloody seizures. He can't drive, so he can't go to the farm. He can't be left alone. And it's like going back to when he had the brain hemorrhage, where he wasn't able to be alone in case he had another brain hemorrhage. He can't be on his own and have a seizure, you see, because the last one he had, he collapsed and hit his head.
It was back to back,
too. Back to, and there was two, one after the other, within, you know, a two-minute break. Of course, I'm fearful that these seizures will damage his brain, that he'll end up being a vegetable or worse, die at a young age, and he's only 30. And then there's me talking about Richard Jefferies, who's 38. And I suppose, yes, here's me, no plans to die, and I'm still trying to get to the beginning of my career. I feel everything else I've done is just sort of preliminary. And that, I guess, the Biggleswick book is like the first proper thing. I mean, I have written other books, but there's no recognition for it, no recognition at all. You know, you just give people I've given out these splidge books. People don't read them. They just, you know, no notion of what's in it. Nobody comes back and says, Richard, you know, that was really enjoyable. A couple of people have. I can't lie. But I'm not saying that they are seminal work or anything, but it was practice. It was practice in writing. I don't know that I've got the skill to be a proper novelist at all. When I read the Biggleswick, I do wonder whether half of the sentences are in the right tense, in the right, you know, using the right words, not terribly imaginative, etc., etc. But anyway, I've got all these other books that I want to write. Mucklebunt, I'm very proud of, but it's not finished. I've recorded some of it. Anyway. You know, I'm having a bit of a moan, I think, because there's a lot of expense going out, and I desperately need some income, really. But then I'm being pushed onto this pedestal by the people who want me to keep talking about freedom and stuff. And these are the same people that still go to Sainsbury's or Tesco's or wherever, and they're not going to the farm places. Admittedly, I can't grow my own food. I've got no space. My garden is full of logs. There's only enough room for logs. And realistically, you know, people say, well, you could grow some cress on the windowsill or a couple of tomatoes. You know, at the end of the day, it's not going to keep you going for months on end, is it? A bag of cress and a couple of tomatoes. I mean, people do have to be realistic. The amount of food that we consume is enormous. And we need fields and fields of the bloody stuff. Or we need a proper allotment or whatever. Anyway. So, but my resources are as limited as they are. Anyway, so people have put me on this pedestal and then they want me to travel to all these places. So they don't want to pay. They don't want to pay any money. They want you to travel. They might give you some, you know, you might be lucky to get 100 quid here. And by the time you've put 60 quid into the diesel, you've got 40. I share it with Julia. You come away with 20 quid for a day. And the long day, you know, you're up at 6, you're off, and you get back at midnight, you got 20 quid for it. And I've been happy to do it because I thought it was worthwhile. But actually, I'm now getting to the point where you see the same old faces sitting there and you think, well, all this could have been done on Zoom.
And nothing's changed. They still go down to
supermarkets. Exactly. So it's very depressing, really, that, you know, they come to listen. But really, most people want the fear. And isn't that weird? They want the fear. They want to be frightened. You look at YouTube thumbnails. I did think about doing a video calling out to my fellow thumbnail creators, to my fellow video creators, and say, will you stop making videos that put people in fear? But the thing is, they need the money. So they have to do shocking videos because that's the only way you get people to watch. And I know, because when you start putting solutions to people, they don't want to know. People don't want to know. So that's really interesting. Maybe that's the video. Who knows? They don't want the answers. They don't want it. They just want fear. So there we go. Anyway, thank you for listening. If you did, a bit of a ranty one this morning. I'm feeling a bit ranty. I don't know why. Take care. All the best. And I will no doubt talk to you at some point tomorrow. So there you go. Bye for now.